Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com and worldwide, including the Armed Forces Radio Network.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And that's fantastic.
From coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.penlive.
Boy Flip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Gamma's Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borgeses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Hummingbird Ridge Winery.
Toy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Heber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com.
Bangkok, Bangkok.
I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiasts and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Thank you, Buffy.
Welcome to the show. That was fun. This is All About Wine, and I'm Mike, and of course, hosting the show tonight is Ron, Vice President, General Manager, Wine Tasting Expert, Vineyardist, Cellar Master, and Winemaker.
you do
that too, don't you?
I do that too. And I was the pressure washer king today at work. I took the pressure washer in, and I pressure washed everything outside. Oh my, what a pain. But it looks good. So good. All set for this weekend's fest, and all set for next weekend's Pet Fest, and all set for everything. So we're heading into the fall with all the stuff coming up.
Yeah, the weather's getting good out there. It's going to be great this weekend. Definitely want to come on out, make plans for the Wine Fest Saturday, September 27th. We'll give you more information on that in a little bit. And also, don't forget, as you mentioned already, the Pasco Pet Fest is a week from Saturday on October the 4th. All right, October the 4th. So stay tuned for that. We'll tell you more about that, I hope. And it's going to be great. So Pasco Pet Fest coming up in a week, in a couple of days, and Wine Fest this weekend. We'll tell you more about that in the show. But right now, I guess we'll get on with it and let you know what's going on here.
We got miscellaneous talk about it. Again, as always, we have to bring up Radio DJ Mike. You're going to start missing some Friday shows, aren't you?
Yes. I already missed last week. That was just in preparation stuff and getting things going. I'll miss this week, and also Saturday I won't be on. Starting, I guess, October 3rd, I won't be having Friday shows, and the rest of it's just going to play by ear because of my other commitment. The one that puts puts crackers on the table. That one I have to go to. So
yeah. You're going to be missing us then in October, aren't you?
Yeah, it's every Thursday and every Friday, and they are thinking it might have to go into some Saturdays also. And there's one Sunday, so yeah, it's kind of strange, but yeah, big time. So
Mike's real job is at Busch Gardens here in Tampa, and the Halloween horror.
That's the Universal version.
Oh, sorry. Oops, my bad.
That's okay.
Hallow Scream is Busch.
That was
close. So wow. Hallow Scream. Well, you know, we've been getting inundated on TV with advertisements here for all of them. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
And so
there's a lot going on. Yeah, I was thinking on going to the one in Orlando too. So I don't know. That's still a possibility because I heard theirs is really good.
It's crowded though. You know. Oh, it's so crowded.
That can be. You know, you get there, you spend 80 something miles to get there, and you get there, and it's like 90 minute wait times, and I don't know. I still gotta look into that. But that's a long way to go and sit in line and wait for stuff. But who knows?
Yeah, and that's just it. I mean, if you didn't have to wait, it wouldn't be bad. But yeah, besides that, I'd rather go to Busch Gardens than I would over there anyway. So. Okay. It's close, it's easy, it's convenient, and then, you're not too far from home.
That's true. Yeah, it's right there. So, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
So, RadioDJMike.com, you can check that out. I'm sure that he'll be keeping you informed of what days he'll be on, what days he won't. But, like I said, he's got to put the crackers on the table, so he's, like the old... Dire Straits song. He's got a daytime job and he's doing all right. Yeah. So. We've got a new studio screen for Blog Talk Radio, and I don't think I like it. If they put that information on the side and keep, that wouldn't be too bad. But I don't think I like this. So my vote is I don't like it. No, sir. But we got some information that we're going to pass on some stuff to you, things that I have found recently here that I want to share with you out there. Oh, again, October is Haunted Month. So if you know any haunted wineries, any wineries that have a ghost or any unwanted spirits, let me know. Email me or... Facebook me or somehow get in touch with me. Let me know what the winery is, and I'll get in touch with them and see if we can't get them on for some information about haunted wineries. Joy's Joy of Wine, she's been a guest a couple times. I'm going to get a hold of her, see if I can't get her on again. She's already started her October haunted blogs, so we'll see if she can't be on with us sometime before the month's out. And, well, that's sad, too, because, Mike always enjoys talking to her about her other blog, her grave interest. So, that's if we get her on without you here, then you'd miss her. So, oh, well. But we got, if you know any haunted wineries, by all means, get in touch. We got a few things to talk about. Something I saw, and we have talked about this in the past. We've talked about it... a number of years ago, and we've talked about it since then, off and on, different times and all that. What is wrong with this now? There it is. Biodynamic wine. Biodynamic. We've mentioned that. We've talked about it. We've done different things. This is from Addison Green, Your Guide to Sustainable Living. It's www.addisongreen.info. Their homepage, they're out of Addison, Texas, actually. And, they've got different things, air, water, community energy, Addison, water and wastewater, water saving options, community service, couple of things, energy things, home and garden, different tips, park and wildlife, projects, recycling and transportation, a whole bunch of different stuff that they have on this site. But this particular site I caught, this is by Barbara Kessler, entitled Biodynamic Wine Leading the Way on Sustainability. I'll paraphrase a lot of this for you. I won't read the whole thing, but it was really interesting. Now, biodynamic, we've talked about this. Biodynamic is a step beyond organic. It's more of a sustainability type winemaking, not just in the vineyard, which is, you know, pretty strict rules there, but also continues on in the winery and stuff like that. And I'm not going to read it all to you. I will, you know, paraphrase some of this. It starts out, biodynamic wine is not difficult to understand once you get past the notion that it's hocus pocus, which, you know, I mean, it's something that we don't really grasp the fact of, you know, some of the stuff that they do. Rudolf Steiner, the Australian philosopher and social reformer, considered the founder of this type of agriculture. And he suggested fermenting compost via cow horn planted before winter and doing certain activities by the different moon phases and, you know, a lot of stuff like that. There's different steps. And if you check back on a past episode, I'm not sure, I guess it was a couple, 3 years ago, we talked about different ones we've talked about since. But biodynamics is more of a down-to-earth approach, and not just in wine, but also many other foods. It's an organic, nature's biodiversity, if you will, using cover crop buffer zones, farm animals, farm-generated compost, stuff like that. The wine grape growing reaches back to recapture some of the land-preserving viticulture practices that predate our chemical agriculture, our chemical addiction, as some people would say. A cow horn compost is really just a concentrated natural fertilizer that makes a compost tea that is full of essential vitamins for grapevines. People championing the movement says it works, and they pay special attention to the seasons, the rhythm of nature, the microorganisms in the soil, and, yeah, the planet alignment. That's another part of it. Jim Fetzer, and we've all heard the name Fetzer Wine. He is now a leading wine-growing person in the biodynamic movement in California. He says, bio means life, and dynamics are the forces, so hence biodynamic. So they work with the forces of nature, are the life forces, as it interprets. It's when they siphon wine from one barrel to the other. We like to do it in the dark of the moon, because on the dark of the moon, we have total gravity going downward, so it pulls the sediment to the bottom, which is another aspect of biodynamic I didn't consider, I didn't know. But interesting concept. Again, it sounds like a little hocus pocus incantation. It doesn't stop there, including wine growing. The extensive application of sulfur herbicides like Roundup, synthetic pesticides to push up yields and all that other stuff, that's stopped. That is not used in biodynamic. It says in the article here, pretending that the soil can survive this assault is more of a incantation thought than anything else. You can't put that much stuff into a soil and expect it to survive. There are actually a lot of indications that it cannot survive with all the stuff we're putting in the soil. And what's happening is... once a soil gets to a level where it's using up all that stuff, then we put more stuff in it to compensate for it, and hence it causes it to zap more stuff out of it. And so hence the biodynamic movement. Collateral casualties are piling up from all this stuff we're putting in the soils, like pollution in the stream, runoff, erosion, a bee population, which is a big thing right there. This is something that I'm an advocate on, keeping the bee population in check and out of trouble and going well and all that. So there's lots of things that could cause problems when you are putting all this chemical in the soil, whereas biodynamic, you don't at all. The spiritual aspects of biodynamic farming it comes into play. Biodynamics are still difficult to find, but are turning up in specialty shops as far as the wine goes and all that. And natural food markets, producers are growing and consumers are still pretty much in the dark and they don't know what to expect. It's a debatable whether there's enough carcinogenic residue on your conventional table wines to worry about it. I don't know. I don't think so, but who's to say? I guess we can test it and see, but that would be a little bit overboard, I think. The entire process of creating wine by chemicals rests on unproven assumptions that it's not causing unsurmountable harm. But I go back to my thought on this, if I may editorialize. Okay, if it's going to cause harm, you're going to have to drink enough of it that it is going to cause harm. If you're drinking that much of it, then the alcohol is going to affect your body, I think, more so than some of the other stuff. If you're going to be drinking that much wine, it's going to start affecting different parts of your body much quicker through alcohol and things than it would be by the trace chemicals. So that's my thought. The biodynamic ventures say, at the very least, their wines are free of all the suspicious additives used in other wines, such as the 12 bad actor pesticides that is used in California wine grapes. It does not list them, so don't ask me what they are. And biodynamic growers say it tastes better. Okay. Winemaking is leading the biodynamic movement in the United States, with 69 vineyards and wineries certified as biodynamic in California, Oregon, and Washington. 69. When I read that, I was surprised, shocked. 69 is a lot of biodynamic vineyards. When we first started to talk about this, we had trouble finding one to get on the show, and they came on. It was a great interview, but 69 now. A handful of biodynamic tea, fruit, and wheat growers are also in the United States, and the certifier Demeter USA is one. Demeter is the Greek goddess of agriculture, actually of harvest and agriculture. So Demeter USA is the biodynamic certifier. And I'm after this, I look them up, and I'll tell a little bit about them too, and about certification for biodynamic. Elisa Frey of Frey Family Vineyards. You've seen it. The Frey are the ones that are non-alcoholic wines and stuff. Frey, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. Frey is a winery that's been around for a long time. They were the first one in the United States to produce biodynamic wines back in 1996. So you're looking, a number of years they've been doing it. Winemakers are picky about flavors and process. So they've grown grapes in the rich soils and made some great wines. But over the years, natural fit for wine has moved in different directions, says Elisa Frey. Some growers also have witnessed the damage done by conventional wine production. And they see how difficult it is to revive exhausted soil. Jim Fetzer, again, told researchers that back in the 1980s, he saw the wildlife vanish and go silent in chemically treated vineyards. Since using the biodynamic techniques, he has now seen wildlife return, including birds and all sorts of stuff. So people saw amazing results when they started experimenting with biodynamic. It explains why the movement took hold in Europe in the first place, and it's in regions of France, Italy, and Spain, and it has came to California. Biodynamic banishes chemicals during growing, and same as organic, they banish it. But for biodynamic, wine estates, it's just the first step of banishing chemicals. The growers go beyond being chemical-free to proactively nurturing the natural biodiversity of the farm using a variety of natural preparations for homeopathic treatments that harmonize with Mother Nature. And yes, cow horns and fertilizers and stuff like that, and planting by the moons and different things. Biodynamic views the farm as a living organism that is self-contained, self-sustaining, and follows the cycles of nature, says Elizabeth Candelero, who is the co-director of Demeter USA. So biodynamic creates its own health and vitality of the farm. The Emersonian approach, and again, we go back to Emerson, who is... Emersonian approach is pushes vine growers and makers to become rigorous stewards of the land. Organic growers also use sheep, as do organic, or as do biodynamic. The crops, the row crops usually planted, or cover crops, or yarrow, chamomile, dandelion, clover, and it also helps with the sheep droppings to fertilize the soils and stuff. A lot of them use baby doll sheep because they're not tall enough to reach up and grab and eat a lot of the grape leaves, so they use that. Bees are also used in crop rotations and stuff, and there are 9 approved preparations that biodynamic farmers use to create the soil and living things. Now, we've talked about those in a previous show. I'm not going to get into the 9 again, but 9 preparations. Biodynamic has been around for quite some time. It is the highest form of sustainable farming, and there are the types of farmers that are now making biodynamic products also, such as jam and pasta, all with biodynamic wheat and, you know, grapes and all sorts of things. According to one study, it pays off not just in flavor, but in the antioxidant properties of the wine. The study, which looked at the French paradox, which basically is the French, you know, stuff themselves with rich foods and don't have heart attacks and strokes, whereas the Americans do for eating the same thing, found that organic wines, a subset encompassing biodynamic, had 50% more antioxidants than conventionally made wine. So it says here, and I quote this sentence, that might not matter to a sommelier concerned with whether the finish is cloying or crisp, but to Americans looking for resveratrol triple bypass inoculation, it's a huge selling point, end of the quote. But the flavor behind it, they're saying, is driving the biodynamic wine. Yeah, I don't know. I expressed my opinion on how it could change the flavors that much. I don't know, and I can't say if it can, but it might. Very pure form of winemaking, allowing no manipulation from added yeast, acids, or other fruit, all common in conventional winemaking, and there are no added sulfites. You can actually taste the expression of the fruit, explains Frey. At the end of the workday, the family biodynamic farm in Mendocino County in Northern California, where they have learned the family trade, biodynamic wine that clearly reflects the grape produce a nuanced and interesting terroir, as the French and wine connoisseurs like to say. That's really exciting to serious wine lovers and drinkers, Frey says. Just as beer and coffee craft makers and consumers have discovered that flavor and sustainability can go hand in hand, so too are wine enthusiasts cheering the biodynamic wine industry. It says, here in the United States and other countries, commercial enterprises veered away from growing big and using chemicals to sustain mass production. They're swerving back to the smaller that's not the word here that I'm looking for. The smaller farms, the smaller wineries, the boutique size. Boomers may have something to say also about this. They're wine touring age and also concerned about health of foods, as are the millennials in particular, are fixated on where their food and drinks come from and will likely support the biodynamic trend. It will cost more, but you are getting a better product, they say. The U.S., like Europe, will continue to see more biodynamic farms added to the current 4,600-plus biodynamic producers worldwide. Now, it says 4,600-plus biodynamic producers, which could include any number of things, not just grapes. So it doesn't break it down to grapes. Germany has 10% of the land and is biodynamic agriculture, not just in grapes, shows part of this trend. Frey states, I believe that access to clean and healthy food should be a human right. And I believe people here in general in the U.S. are more interested in their food quality than they have been in generations. So, back on the front there, biodynamic is starting to make a move again. 69 wineries in California, Oregon, Washington that are part of the biodynamic movement. The choice, the type of wines, conventional wine uses pesticides and herbicides, and it lists them, which are carcinogenic, acutely toxic, and believed to interfere with human fertility. It also may include sulfites up to 300 parts per million. May include chemicals used to assist fermentation or to adjust the taste, which as added sugar, such as added sugar or food coloring. The sustainability may or may not be important to the grower. That's your conventional wine. Organic. No synthetic pesticides or fertilizers. No sulfites added. Uses sustainable methods such as natural compost. Some wines carry the label made with organically grown grapes. These wines do not qualify for full USDA organic certification because they are made with some additives such as yeast or other added sulfites, but they are free of pesticides and GMOs. And then biodynamic. No synthetic pesticides or fertilizers, no sulfites added, no synthetic additives allowed in wine-making process. Farmers rely on the farm's internal resources to sustain the crop, enrich the soil, and fight pests. Encourages biodiversity on the farm. Advocates believe that it produces the richest flavors and is the highest form of sustainable wine grape agriculture. I'm going to have to look for a biodynamic wine. I haven't been. I honestly have to, admit that. I have not been looking for a biodynamic wine.
That's something you would find on a shelf or what?
Yeah, and I bet you Total Wines would probably have it. Yeah. Maybe even ABC might even have it. I would think that they all these might. So I don't know. Yeah, you can probably find those. And I haven't had one, but I'm going to start looking for one. I'm going to see if I can't find one. Just to see. The thing is though, you can buy a Merlot. Mm-hmm. At Walgreens or Walmart for $3-4, or you can get one for hundreds, literally. But if you get yourself an organic wine and you taste it and you go, ooh, this is no good, is it because it's a cheaper one? Is it because it wasn't made right? Or is it just because our biodynamic? I mean, there's so many factors. I don't know. I just, this whole thing is, you know, got me wondering. It is, you know, I don't know. I can't see how.
Worth looking up, but looking for and sampling it and see taste wise what there is different about it. I don't know. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I don't know. The website Demeter, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, Demeter Association Inc. It's www.demeter-usa.org. And this is the certifying site for biodynamic. And they can also certify you for organic, too, I think. Organic certification, I've always thought, came out of Florida here. But these people are located, I think, I want to say California. I don't know. I can't see the thing right now. But it says, the certification for you. The Demeter Biodynamic Farm Standard applies to the certification of farms and ranches for the purpose of allowing their farms and ranches and resulting agricultural products to carry the Demeter certification marks Biodynamic, Demeter, and Demeter Certified Biodynamic. The Demeter, I guess I'm pronouncing that, D-E-M-E-T-E-R, I guess it's Demeter. Demeter. Biodynamic farm and processing centers meet the minimal requirements set by Demeter International. These base standards form a common legal foundation and agricultural framework for biodynamic practice worldwide. And then it goes on and starts talking about other stuff and different information, a little background and different things and some of the stuff about it. But this is their thing. It also has biodynamic preparations, which it says the use of preparations is a requirement of the Demeter Biodynamic Farm Standard. There are 9 in all, although members are encouraged to expand on this list based on the needs and opportunities present on their own farm. Made with herbs, mineral substances, and animal manures that are utilized in field sprays and composts, inoculants applied in minute doses, much like homeopathic remedies are for humans. Timely applications revitalize the soil and stimulate root growth, enhance the development of microorganisms and humus formation, and aid in photosynthetic activity. So, you know, and they have a request for an application here that you can send off for and fill it out and all that. So, I really should send it off and get an application just to see what it all says on it. If they'll send me one, once they see it's Florida, they'll say, you people have to spray everything down there. But I might do that. I might send that off and see what I can find. But Demeter Association, they all the information and everything's on there. And, biodynamic. It's an ongoing thing. I've talked about this before, and I've always ended up with the same debate in my mind. Is this really worth it? Is biodynamic worth the extra cost? Is it that much better? They say so, but of course they do. They're growing it. They're doing it. So we are leaving Texas here. We're going to go to Utah. I've got some emails out to Utah. I'm going to follow them up and all that and see if I can't line up some people for future dates, start talking to Utah. But we also got Vermont coming up. and I saw this little small blurb here. This is from a local, I say local, I can't do it. Yeah, my computer just doesn't. This is from Fox 44 News. I don't recognize a Fox 44 News. My Champlain Valley. So that sounds like New York, Champlain, New York. Right now, the current temperature is 68 degrees there, and the moon is out. So it probably is Champlain, New York. The article says that this is the Vermont Grape and Wine Education Chair John McCann says it's funny because several years ago people just didn't have any idea that we could grow grapes in this state and make wine in this state. He says money is now pouring into the wine business after several wineries held an open house a month ago. Others are interested. Vermont is all based around agriculture, and what a better way to utilize farms than to start close down that have closed down from dairies and keeping the line keeping the land preserved by growing grapes. It says that the former Grape and Wine Council president John McCain believes they have a unique flavor. The Marquette, the La Crescent, the Frontenay are all grapes that grow great here in the cold climate. They're hardier and they can survive the temperatures, the sub-zero temperatures. These are University of Michigan, or Minnesota, and Cornell University grapes that they're growing up there. I'm sure we'll find out more when we talk to them. He says the industry didn't happen overnight. It has been going on for years in people's basements and stuff. You really get a most fruitful crop 5 to 7 years after they planted, and they're starting to pop up now. He said the growth is expanding. There are at least 35 wineries in the state, and most of them have been established recently. 35 in Vermont. Vermont's not a very big state. Good for them. Over the past 5 years, wineries and vineyards have popped up all over Vermont. One of the biggest factors is the weather. Climate change is starting to dictate what kind of grape business owners can and can't grow. It says that the could potentially help wine business here with the climate change and compare it with the Finger Lakes area. Some of the Cuyahoga, Sauval, and other type of grapes can probably be grown in Vermont. So just saw that on there. We're going to be talking to Vermont in a few weeks, but the thrill of Vermont grapes. Now what happened? Oh, the screen decided to change on me real fast and do something. So, but Vermont, that's something for us to look forward to. We've talked about the California drought off and on and how it's affecting it, and we haven't said too much about it lately and all that. But I saw this little chart here, this little article here. If my stinking computer would pull it up here, boy, that's driving me crazy. That's why, because it says it's not responding. Let me see if this will come up. But it was talking about that almost 50% of the country is in a drought right now. Oh, I'm back to the studio here for some reason. That's all right. But almost 50% of the country, almost 50% of the country is in drought. Most of it west of the Mississippi, and or west of the Missouri. California still in a tremendous drought, but it is also affecting areas like Texas, Oklahoma, the Panhandle, western Kansas. And also somewhat of a drought in areas like Georgia and Alabama. Southern Missouri is low on water and stuff like this. So it's not just California. A lot of areas are in a lot of grape areas. The hill country of Texas is hit with a severe drought right now, a very severe drought, as bad as California. So some of these areas are being affected a lot more so than what we hear, because we're always hearing about California and not other areas. So it's basically west of the Missouri River and the Mississippi River, the Missouri, Mississippi, west of those, a lot of low water conditions, drought conditions. Says that right now 37.25 million people are living in drought conditions. So substantial. 95% of California remains in a severe or worse drought. So it's something to be concerned about. Regardless of where you live, the water situation is not getting much better here in this country, or actually anywhere. There's problems, all sorts of other stuff. Come on now. It takes a while for any of this stuff to pull up, and it just I want to scream because of it. But one of these days, I will get into it. This is something I saw, and after I talked about this for a while, it may be the last subject we cover tonight, because we got a festival this coming weekend, and I want to tell about that and hit on the fest coming up in a week. But this is from Wines and Vines. Wines and Vines is a great magazine, by the way. It's one of my favorite. It's always got some great articles in it. It always has some interesting stuff. It's just been one of my favorite magazines for years in the trade business. I think it's something like, 26 dollars a year or something, a little over $2 an issue, but a very, very good magazine, and it covers a lot of stuff. But this particular article, Tasting the Effects of Wine Closures. All right, so it caught my eye. The first tasting was sponsored by Guala, G-U-A-L-A, Guala Closures. And it took place in the morning, and it featured wines by Cade Winery in Napa Valley. C-A-D-E, I believe that's pronounced Cade. Cade Winery in Napa Valley. Cade is part of the Plumjack Group, and the general manager of Plumjack Winery and partner in Cade said the company had been open to alternative closures because the founding partners saw firsthand how unpleasant a corked wine was for customers of the original Plumjack Wine and Spirits Shop in San Francisco. He said the experience helped motivate the company's willingness to bottle its estate wines under screw cap and to participate in this study, which was in conjunction with the University of California, Davis. So a little background there. Both of the sessions were held in the kitchen of the former Copia building in Napa, and grew a maximum crowd of 75 people. That's all that could fit in there. Tastings were conducted with the Restel glassware from Germany. Dr. Anita Oberholster from the Enology Department of UC Davis provided an overview of the research project and wrote papers. She said the first question the research is attempting to answer is whether variability using a specific closure is large enough that a consumer can taste the difference. And this has always been a debate. Does it taste different because I have a screw cap or a cork, or is it just perception? Well, Plumjack and UC Davis arranged to have 200 bottles of the 2011 Cade Sauvignon Blanc bottled with an Amarin natural cork. Nomacork Select 3000 synthetic cork or Amcor Ceranex screw cap for a total of 600 bottles in the study. The rate of oxidation was observed through color darkening or color absorbance over time as measured by a spectrophotometer. with each bottle acting as its own control. Using each bottle as a data point, the researchers were able to create a slope based on the observance of oxygen transmission, or OTR. So whenever I say OTR, oxygen transmission. Based on a study, screw caps appear to offer the most consistent OTR, followed by synthetic corks. The greatest variation came from natural corks. Oberholzer said, getting a better understanding of closure variability should help winemakers make informed decisions at bottling to ensure the wines conform to a specific style. Now, that was interesting. It said, while the screw cap and synthetic closures did a better job of preserving the wine as it tasted at bottling, natural corks added more aging character, which resulted in a more complex wine. So depending on the wine or winemaker, the age character could be a desirable trait. And then again, it could not. Okay. At the end, it is all about helping the winemaker to make informed decisions. So that's what this is. Now, preserving versus aging. The Plumjack team, including Cade winemaker Danielle Cryot, brought bottles of the Sauvignon Blanc that is part of the UC Davis study, as well as its 2008 Cade Howell Mountain Cabernet Sauvignon, which was bottled under screw cap and natural cork. The tasting was conducted blind, and Cryot gauged the opinion of those in the audience. The greatest variation in taste came between the synthetic corks and screw caps versus the natural cork, which almost tasted like a different wine. Now, that was interesting. Cryot described the Sauvignon Blanc bottled with natural cork as exhibiting more pear, melon, honey, and cantaloupe, with less acidity and being a bit more rounded, softer, and showing more of the oak. Whereas the synthetic cork and screw cap wines were both fresh, flinty, and floral, in Cryot's opinion, but it had slightly different fruit flavors. Basically, she thought the synthetic and screw cap closures performed best at preserving some of the aromas and flavors that she was trying to capture in the bottle. They both tasted more like the day the wine was bottled, she said. The cork-sealed wine tasted the most different to Cryot, and this appeared to be the consensus of those in the audience as well. The cork closure stood out as most different, but not necessarily in a bad way. It was just more aged. She said, I felt the closure had played a role in stylistically changing the wine. The Cabernet Sauvignons tasted relatively similar, and when Cryot asked the audience to raise their hands to indicate preference, the room was about evenly split between the two. And it says, she says, I'm making sure that the tannin structure and mouthfeel are balanced before eating the wine in the bottle. The wine still tastes like Howell Mountain, but hopefully the tannin structure isn't a grippy, hard, undrinkable kind of tannin. And it says that the closure seemed to preserve what she was trying to express in the wine. So it, either one of them worked. Later that day, Doug Fletcher, the vice president of winemaking for Toralto Wine Group, presented wines from his own trial on different screw caps. The tasting was sponsored by Mala Closures and featured the 2012 Pinot Grigio bottled in February 2013, under five VinPerfect closures with different oxygen transmission rates, and a Serenix lined closure and one with Serentin. Sarantin, Serentin. The bottles with the lowest oxygen transference had some sensory attributes of reduction as well as a lean texture. On the other end of the oxygen transmission spectrum, the wines were rounder and more fully developed. Fletcher's preference, which was also the preference of those in the audience, was for the wines bottled with a closure offering a mid-range OTR. He said the screw cap and liners for the trial for commercial release and less reduction, which he will continue to use, They both served their purpose pretty well on all the wines. He found that a couple of them didn't do as well, but he was thrilled with everything. Well, I thought the wine bottled under closures with higher rate OTRs would have browned or gone oxidative. Fletcher said they have held up quite well. And in light of what he's learned through the study, he thinks less sulfur dioxide could be used in the cellar in tandem with a nitrogen drip system on the bottling line. So, you know, basically they're just saying there's not a big difference between screw cap and corks. If you're going to, you know, cork is going to age it more. The screw cap's going to keep it fresh. The, you know, the different closures is going to keep it fresher tasting, and whereas the cork is going to give it a little bit more of a depth. But, you know, I don't know. Most young wines and most people are drinking wines, I don't think they'll notice the nuances of one that's a little bit older. So, who knows?
Okay.
So.
What? Oh. Is this, did you have anything else you wanted to,
Let me see if there's, yeah, here's something I want to just talk for a second about here. And, it's a long article, and I'm not going to go through the whole thing. But the article, this is out of the Press Democrat out of Sacramento, California. The Press Democrat. And it says, wine execs concerned about the growth of craft beer and specialty spirits. And they interviewed a bunch of California wine executives. Ones that 26 senior executives from a lot of different major wineries. Joseph Gallo from E.J. Gallo was there. Rick Tigner was one of them from Kendall Jackson. Jay Wright of Constellation Brands, which is, you know, enormous and all that. And they've all came up with the thing that they're getting concerned about the growth of the small breweries and the craft beer breweries and the cider and specialty spirits that are popping up. And the millennials, the 18 to 34 age group, don't show any loyalty to anything like previous generations. And so there are a lot of wine and spirits. Craft beer is becoming a big market now. I've had people come into the winery and talk about the fact that the craft breweries that they have visited and that they see all over the place. It's funny because this one couple, she was a big wine advocate, and he, on the other hand, was a big beer advocate. And so they would visit both wineries and breweries. And it was fun talking to them because they said they have no limitations on finding either one. They're out there all over the place. The just as many breweries as our wineries popping up all over. And it's something that is making an effect. They said that it sells of California wines continue to be strong, but it's something that they're concerned about as the millennials get older and they are starting to switch their allegiance from wines to these craft beers and specialty shops, specialty spirits and stuff like that. So, and there's a lot of people who continue to make comments about it and all that on this particular site here. And most of them are not real, shall we say, they are not big wine enthusiasts on a lot of these comments. But the Press Democrat, if you want to check it out, www.pressdemocrat.com. And it's wine execs concerned about growth of craft beer and specialty shops. And there you go. That's a it's a long article, and I'm not going to go through all of it, but in a nutshell.
Cool. Very good stuff. Looking at 5 till 8 o'clock. Okay. And you have Wine Fest coming up this Saturday. That's September 27th, for those of you listening to us live or within the next day or two. So make arrangements to visit the area and see a really cool wine fest. I'll give you some information on it right after this in about a minute and... A minute and 15 seconds. We'll try this one.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida State's Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@flewn.com. That's corp@flewn.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Yep. There you go, and it's going to be in the mid to upper 80s on Saturday. For those of you in Montana, I don't know if you heard this earlier, but they got up to what 90 degrees or something today.
Did it really? No, I didn't hear that. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, they said, oh, it's in the hundreds in Arizona, which is that's what normal. That's probably winter for them. But then they go and they said someplace in Montana hit 90 degrees. I thought, what?
Wow.
I mean, Montana. You think their skin would start peeling at 90 degrees? I don't know what happens up there for them to be used to it. But
wow!
And
Cheyenne, Wyoming, we have to remember, a couple of weeks ago got 10 inches of snow.
yeah, that's true. It's crazy.
Oh man.
Yep. That's crazy. But come out this weekend. That is Saturday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. And Patrick Foy will be providing the music entertainment there at the winery during Wine Fest, and it's going to be great. You have some cool vendors, of course. The independent consultant is Kathy Kessel with Scentsy is going to be there, and you want to check out the Fall Harvest Flyer, and there's all kinds of cool stuff from Scentsy there. Raffle Rescue, of course, will be there. The Pet Food Assistance Program of Pasco County, Florida, will be there, and make a donation, and it goes a long way, and it really helps a lot. And you want to there's going to be a drawing. Let's see, what is this? Raffles will be drawn at the winery October 4th at Pet Fest. Some of the prizes are passes to Walt Disney World, SeaWorld, Aquatica, Bissell vacuum cleaner, various gift cards, and more. So, very cool. And, come by and talk to the raffle lady. So it's really, really good cause. What else? What do you have? Oh.
Yep.
I thought you were. Okay. Let's see. What else? Nicole has Cutco Cutlery. That's the world's finest cutlery.com. You want to check that out with kitchen utensils, flatware. And it's also a featured product at Epcot's Food and Wine Festival, so check that out. Boxer and Christie, of course, will be there with their Flame Rock oil candles, and they also take debit and credit cards, which I think I used when I bought my Rock oil candles last time. Let's see, Gunner Leathers, they began about 4 years ago with a new dog Gunner. The pet items, the belts, bags, purses, luggage, bracelets, watch bands, all kinds of cool stuff, knife holsters. Let's see, and custom items also. Oh, cool. So check that out. And Susan's going to be there with hats galore, crocheted by Susan Marie. That's Let's see, a bunch of items there. I can't go through all this stuff here. Susie's Dogs. Oh, here's, yeah, you got the munchies. Your go-to visit as well with, what else? Grilled or steamed hot dogs, all kinds of cool stuff. A new meal combo starting at only $4.
Wow.
What a great deal. Yeah. And,
he's got good food, too. Very good food.
They're all set up there, and they'll be waiting for you Saturday. So, you know, enjoy visiting the vendors and a lot more. There's also, of course, a wine tasting with the one and only Ron right here on the wine show. That's right. You can meet the celebrity himself there. And there's going to be a lot of shopping's always fun there, and it's a great chance to pick up unique gift items for friends, family members, and don't forget the holidays are right around the corner. They'll be here before you know it, so come on out to Florida State's Winery this weekend and enjoy the time. The weather's going to be great. And okay, so cool. And, of course, it is, again, pet-friendly. Speaking of pets, it is October 4th. We mentioned this before. I don't know if you have information on that. I don't see anything readily available on here. But
we're going to have
know more about that.
Like 60 vendors and rescue groups, and you can adopt pets. You can come out. We are pet friendly. If you want to bring your pets out and, you know, walk around with your pets during the Pet Fest, it's going to be a great event, and it's all a fundraiser, and there's going to be some great raffles and great prizes. And so next week we'll have a whole bunch of information for you on that.
Yeah, fantastic. So come on by. That's October 4th is the Pasco Pet Fest, and it's a week from this Saturday. So make plans and arrangements. It's going to be a big thing over there. Also, don't forget to bring in a donation of pet food for Raffle Rescue, and you'll get 10% off discount on your wine purchase at Florida State's Winery. So what a great deal there. Yeah, definitely want to check that out. And let's see, you have a wine class that you want to schedule ahead of time on October the 12th. That lasts 3 hours. It's 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., and that's there at Florida State's Winery. So check it out. There's a lot of things happening. It's that time of year, and it's going to be great time. If you go to the website at floridastateswines.com, you can subscribe to the newsletter. You get it every 2 weeks. There's really cool stuff. There's information, of course, about the show, about what's going on at the winery, like this month's tip jar is for Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Tampa Bay. So you kind of, you know, find out what's going on there, and you find out about the web wine fest, wine classes. All the information is there, as well as recipes and some cool wine facts. So subscribe to the newsletter, get on the list, and you'll get it every 2 weeks. And it's really a good read, and everything's cool. So do that. Do it now. So we'll wait here.
We'll wait. We'll wait.
Wait.
Can
you get back? We'll wait till you do that. Are you back yet? Okay. So anyway, it's just after 8 o'clock. We'll go ahead and end the show, and we'll see you back here next Thursday.
You going to be with us next week?
Let me check and see if there's something on my calendar for next week. What is it? I might be. I have to check... I don't know when my vacation ends, actually. It would be good if I knew that. Yeah, I'll
let
have to
me
check,
know.
But hopefully I'll be back there for October. And maybe we'll get in touch with some wineries and the haunted, spooky ones and see what we can do there. So that'll be cool. So stay with us during the month of October. It's going to be a great time here on All About Wine. Thank you for tuning in. And thank you, bus people, as always, for sticking it out there on the lawn with the mosquitoes and everything. There's no mosquitoes out right now, I don't think. But, no.
Yeah.
But,
thank you all for listening.
Yeah, we'll see you all next week. Will be October 2nd, right here, 7 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio / All About Wine. Thanks again. We'll see you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery. Florida State's Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida State's Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813
416-996-2113. The email address is corp@flune.com. That's corp@flewn.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Follow the Armed Forces Radio Network on Twitter at the AFRN and on Facebook at facebook.com/Armed Forces Radio. Thank you for listening to this show. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.